Case number 13-5168, Alan Gross et al., appellants versus United States of America. Mr. Buckman for the appellants, Mr. Birch for the appellee.
Mr. Buckman, good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Barry Buckman on behalf of the appellants, Alan Gross and Judith Gross. Your Honors, we respectfully submit that the district court decision should be reversed for two reasons. First, Sosa does indeed direct us to focus on the location of injuries, and the Grosses have alleged substantial injuries in the United States. Therefore, purely as a matter of statutory construction, this case should not have been dismissed at the initial pleading stage. Second, even if this court were to conclude that the foreign country exception bars some of the claims at issue here, City of Claiborne makes clear that even under rational basis review, a statutory provision or an ordinance, in this case the foreign country exception, can be facially constitutional and still unconstitutional as applied. And that is exactly the situation that we have here. It is the situation that we have here, Your Honors, because there was, in the district court, there was not even a contention, much less a showing or a finding, that Cuban law will apply in this case. Therefore, the purpose of the foreign country exception, which is to preclude the application of foreign tort law in FTCA cases against the government, is not served by applying it here. It therefore is irrational to apply it here when the whole reason for applying it doesn't exist. And I would submit that all the things I've just said are particularly true, Your Honors, when we're dealing with a precluded interest or curtailed interest or right that, while not fundamental for purposes of obtaining strict or intermediate scrutiny, is certainly very important. And I refer, of course, of the right of U.S. citizens to have access to the courts to seek redress for their injuries. Now, with respect to the statutory argument, I think it's important to know, because I know the government makes a big deal about the domestic injuries being caused by, or would not exist but for the non-economic injuries that Mr. Gross has suffered in Cuba. A couple of points I want to make about that. The first is, I think it's important to draw a distinction between Mr. Gross's status of incarceration and his injuries and damages resulting from that status. He has physical and mental non-economic injuries resulting from that status of incarceration, and he has economic injuries resulting from that status of incarceration. But that status is not the injury itself. That is the conduct of the U.S. government and the intervening conduct of the Cuban government in continuing to wrongfully detain him. I would respectfully submit that it is no different than the intervening conduct in Sosa that the Supreme Court said would likewise be irrelevant as the U.S. government's conduct. Your Honors may recall that they said one of the reasons why we don't want to focus on the U.S. government's conduct in the U.S. is because there often will be intervening conduct overseas as well, or in a foreign country as well. In that case, the conduct of Mr. Sosa and other Mexican nationals in detaining Mr. Alvarez. I would submit that the intervening act of the Cuban government in detaining Mr. Gross is no different here. Again, it's Mr. Gross's status of incarceration that is causing his distinct injuries. If Mr. Gross were in the best shape of his life, both physically and mentally, he would still not have been able to attend to his business here in the United States, and his business would have failed.
Won't that often, if not always, be the case when, at least when it's an American citizen who runs into some trouble in a foreign country and then brings a case like this?
I would say not always, Your Honor, for the following reason. I would draw a distinction between a case where a U.S. citizen, as a result of their injury, is not able to work anymore, even after they come back. For example, they get paralyzed overseas, mm-hmm. or they have a terribly herniated discs in their back, and so their status of incarceration is irrelevant. Even after they come back as a result of their physical ailments, they're not able to work anymore. I think that's different than a situation where if they're detained overseas and came back, they might be able to work. Now, there's no evidence in the record yet about whether...
Wait, so what's your answer for the hypothetical of the person who's injured overseas and comes back?
I would say if they're physically injured and as a direct result of the physical condition, they're not able to work, that would be a tougher argument for us. Mm-hmm. But I would say that here it's the status of incarceration that caused his business to fail.
And why are those two things different in terms of arising in a foreign country language?
I would submit they're different because one is one. In one case, you're in your honor's hypothetical, the inability to work is flowing directly from the physical condition, regardless of where the plaintiff is. And in this case, they have flown from they have derived from the fact that he was not able, that he has not been, literally not been able to come back home. And I would also submit in that regard, Your Honor, if I may, that this case involves the economic injuries here are at least as separate and distinct from the foreign injuries as they were in SH X-ray Holt, which of course we relied on heavily in our briefs. Because in that case, as Your Honor may have seen, including in the most recent decision that came out just a couple months ago after a full bench trial, there was a lot of evidence of physical problems starting even in Spain. And yet the court found that the cerebral palsy was separate and distinct from those medical problems that started in Spain. We don't even have that here. We're arguing that the economic injuries flow from his continuing wrongful detention. I would also submit, I know the government made a big deal about this in their briefing. I understand that SH X-ray Holt is a district court case from California. I understand that it's not binding on this court. I would submit to you that there are very few cases post-SOSA applying SOSA in a factual circumstance like this one. Indeed, I would submit to you that we have not been able to find any case that is closer to being on all fours with our case than SH X-ray Holt.
I was trying to find my notes, but I thought the allegations in the complaint in that case are meaningfully distinguishable from the allegations in this complaint.
Well, actually, Your Honor, I mean,
in terms of where the injury was.
Well, certainly the court in its original opinion last November denying the government's motion for summary judgment made a big point about how, at least as to the minor plaintiff, and he actually used those words, the district judge, at least as to the minor plaintiff, are not alleging, not claiming for any injury other than the cerebral palsy. But if you actually look at the complaint itself, page 6 of the complaint, mm-hmm. actually has a claim on behalf of the mother for the emotional distress that she suffered during the birthing process in Spain. And one of the things he didn't do, the district judge, was say, well, the minor's claims can go forward and the mother's claims can't. What he did do, what the district court did do after the bench trial, was say, look, I understand the government's argument that some of the damages included in the damage claim here may have been incurred in Spain. But all that is a damages allocation issue. It doesn't mean the claim doesn't get to go forward in its entirety. And so I would submit that at worst for us, that is the case here, that on remand, the district court could do an analysis of which portion of our damages are attributable strictly to Mr. Gross's non-economic injuries sustained in Cuba. It does not mean that the whole case should be thrown out in its entirety.
Do you do with the language in SOSA that says, it's the concluding language, the foreign country exception bars all claims based on any injury suffered in a foreign country? Based on, because your complaint, I think rightly, talks about that the economic injuries here were suffered as a result of the detention in Cuba. I mean, that's as a result of, based on, in SOSA, it does seem, I know SOSA has a different fact pattern, but the broad language in SOSA seems to fit the fact pattern in this case.
What I would say about that is two things, Your Honor. The first is, as Your Honor correctly notes, all of the injury in SOSA occurred in Mexico, and both the court's opinion and Justice Ginsburg's opinion highlight that. Mm-hmm. And that's why, frankly, I think SH X-ray Hope felt comfortable drawing that distinction between the injuries that occurred overseas versus the injuries that occurred here. I would also note in that regard that SH X-ray Holt is not the only case that does something like that in the context of, you know, splitting claims or immunities in a Federal Tort Claims Act case. And I'm only responding to your question. I know we didn't cite this case in our brief, but the court's opinion in Moore versus Valder, Judge Henderson, your opinion in that case, involved the discretionary function exception. And what the court found was that some of the allegations in terms of the decision to prosecute, the interaction with witnesses were barred by the discretionary function exception, but the claim for unauthorized release of the grand jury testimony to unauthorized third parties could go forward. And the court said it's important to parse the allegations to figure out which are immune and which are subject to immunity and which are not. So in other words, immunity is not an all or nothing proposition.
Mm-hmm. Just thinking about the impact of your theory, it does seem, and I'm going back to my first question now, that U.S. citizen, this is a, in essence a backdoor way in terms of result of getting U.S. citizens out of the foreign country exception, because U.S. citizens often would be able to plead resulting injuries. And the problem with that, I see in terms of effect, is Congress specifically considered whether to limit this exception to aliens or not when they first enacted it, and when, for whatever reason, and I'm not sure about the policy, but for whatever reason, they enacted the foreign country exception to apply to U.S. citizens as well.
Yeah, Your Honor, and I see I'm almost out of time, but I'll answer your question as best I can, and obviously, if you permit me, I'll go over. I would say a couple of things. One, whether citizen or not, that issue arises of if the person is otherwise legally living here and they have a business here, they could have that issue. So I think it's less about the citizenship and more about, are the U.S. injuries purely derivative of the foreign injuries, or are they separate and distinct? And for the reasons that I stated earlier, I think they are separate and distinct. This is not a situation. Mr. Gross could be in the best condition of his life, and he still would not be able to work as a result of his status of incarceration, which is the result of the U.S. government's conduct and the Cuban government's intervening conduct, which Sosa said both are irrelevant. If we're going to focus on the Cuban government's conduct in that regard, then we should focus on the U.S. government's conduct. We're not asking for that. We're saying let's focus on the injuries, understanding, again, purely as a textual matter, that that means some categories of damages may not be recoverable, like they were not in SH, but then that would just give rise to our constitutional argument, which is that if the whole purpose of the foreign country exception is not implicated by the facts, then there's no rational basis to apply it in this particular case. And as Your Honors noted in Sanger versus EPA, that's all an as-applied challenge is. It's saying, is it constitutional based on the facts of the particular case? And as Justice White noted for the court in City of Claiborne, it's the preferred method for resolving constitutional issues. We're not obviously making a facial challenge to seeking to strike the provision, the foreign country exception, from the statute, as the other cases that the government cites, like Heller versus U.S. and Schneider versus U.S., sought to do.
All right, we'll give you a couple minutes in reply.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Birch?
Good morning. May it please the court. With respect to the statutory issue, I would say that this court's decision in Harbury certainly forecloses the statutory claim that they're making. Harbury dealt with the claims of a wife based on the injuries of her husband in Guatemala. And the court's decision applying Sosa was very clear and very broad, that because he suffered the injuries there, that the foreign country exception applied. That language is controlling here, and it goes on to say that her claims are derivative. Her derivative claims similarly arise in Guatemala for purposes of the FDCA, because they are based entirely on the injuries her husband suffered there. And indeed, the complaint in this case does, as Judge Kavanaugh alluded to, tie the injuries directly to the detention in Cuba. If you look at the complaints, paragraphs 139, 156, and 168, the counts that apply to the United States, the complaint is explicit that the claims all arise from the injuries he suffered as a result of the detention. So the location of the detention is clear, and the statutory analysis, I think, follows easily from Sosa and Harbury. I think the court is compelled to follow Harbury in that case. With respect to the constitutional avoidance theory that they're making under the equal protection, I was unable to find any appellate decision that applied the kind of as-applied analysis that they are suggesting to a minimum rationality test, a minimum rationality case. And indeed, to do so would significantly warp the legal standard and convert it to one of heightened scrutiny by requiring that every single plaintiff who shows up be within the zone of the purposes of the statute. That has never been required, and is directly contradictory to the language in Sosa that puts the burden on the plaintiff to, quote, negative every conceivable basis which might support it being the law. That's at 508 U.S. 315. And so the theory here clearly puts an entirely unprecedented spin on the equal protection analysis. The letter I put forth on the court before the court yesterday with respect to Beach Communications, certainly the holding in that case was overruled, but the language that in the opinion that I quoted in the letter is directly applicable. And I think of the appellate decisions that I saw, this is the one that came closest to addressing this notion of an as-applied challenge under the minimum rationality. And its logic is compelling that there essentially is no difference with the exception of cases that involve either heightened scrutiny or some fundamental right, and neither of those are implicated here.
Can I go back to the Harbury? Just hypothetically, if the head of General Motors is asked to go to Cuba on behalf of the United States government, and basically the same thing happens to him as happened to Mr. Gross.
He's arrested, put in jail.
He's arrested and incarcerated. And he files a claim along with his wife, just as in the Harbury case. And the wife claims loss of consortium, emotional distress, etc. That's the Harbury case, isn't it? And I know there's very broad language in Harbury, but I'm just trying to distinguish that from what the head of General Motors might say about the fact that he is being detained outside of the country has adversely affected the corporation, and the value of the corporation has decreased, and he's seeking some recovery for that financial loss. Very separate, it seems, situation from the Harbury situation. And therefore, we really, you know, we're back to Sosa and the language there that Judge Kavanaugh was discussing with counsel.
Well, the difference would only, I mean, they're making a similar claim about the loss of business interests, and that's certainly a form of damage that would flow from the injury if the injury were one that was recoverable. There's just no question about that. The question is an antecedent question as to whether the injury is one that implicates the exception and therefore triggers the sovereign immunity. The analysis is driven by the injury, not by the damages that might flow from it.
But the injury, I thought the distinction he was trying to draw in part was the injury is due to the fact that the United States won't get him out of Cuba. As distinct.
I'm sorry, the injury was what?
The injury, in part, was due to the fact that the United States won't get him out of Cuba. And I'm just trying to understand how broad that language is, and that's why I gave you the hypothetical of General Motors with a major corporation where he is integral to the daily operation and decision management. As distinct from Mrs. Harbury, Jennifer Harbury, who was the wife of the head of General Motors. Mm-hmm. Just very different. Her injuries stem directly from his being incarcerated. What happens to General Motors is distinct. That's all I'm getting at. And I know the language is very broad, so I understand that. And that's what the district court basically said, that we've written so broadly he had no choice. But is there any distinction?
The distinction would only be at the remedial stage, I would offer, Your Honor. The location of the causing injury is the same.
So you can't get past the motion to dismiss, that's your point.
Sorry? So the plaintiff cannot get by the motion to dismiss, no. The if they were to bring a separate claim for the failure of the United States to act now, that may well be subject to other exceptions, for example, a discretionary function, but that's not a part of the complaint that they're bringing here. So the court does not need to reach that issue. Finally, the only thing I would add about the SH decisions is that in both of those decisions, it turns on a much more difficult decision in that case as to where the injury occurred. That's what made those cases difficult for the district court at core, and we could quibble about other aspects of them as well, but the most important part of it for our purposes is the tricky nature of cerebral palsy in determining where that injury occurred. And if you look at the second decision, star 17, the court's analysis there shows that unlike other conditions, it's not a disease, it's tricky to tell, and so the medical consensus is that it doesn't arise until the symptoms are manifest. The symptoms were not manifest until the child was in the United States. So for purposes of the exception, the court concluded that the injury occurred in the United States. It's not different. It doesn't provide for a different analysis. Plaintiff's theory would, under the equal protection, would force the court to relook at all of the major equal protection cases, all the way back to Yik Wo in San Francisco, and permit someone in Yik Wo's circumstances to go before a court and say, you know, my laundry facility is just as fire safe as any other building in San Francisco, and therefore you shouldn't uphold this zoning ordinance against me. And that sort of radical rewriting is just not in order and unsupported by the case law. Thank you.
Can I ask you, I know we're not supposed to question the wisdom of the legislature, and is this act still being implemented? Are we still, is USAID still sending people down there?
I don't know. I don't know, Your Honor. I do know that the efforts continue to get Mr. Gross out.
The goal is laudable, but...
I'm sorry?
The goal is laudable, but...
Yes.
Practically speaking, this is a very dangerous thing to do, I think. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Buckman, why don't you take 2 minutes?
Just real quickly on the statutory point, I think in addition to S.H. Holt, you also have the principles of construction from the Supreme Court in Dolan. In contrast to the government's assertion, this is not a case like Nordic Village or Pena, where you were dealing with the Rehabilitation Act or a bankruptcy code waiver. Dolan specifically said the principles enunciated in that case of interpreting immunity broadly and resolving ambiguities in the government's favor specifically are, quote, not helpful, end quote. And that the FTCA is different in terms of broad and unprecedented waiver of liability and exceptions having to be construed narrowly. I agree that this situation is much more like the one that Judge Rogers described in terms of the distinct economic damages in the United States, even with respect to Mrs. Gross's loss of consortium itself. And she, by the way, she has two distinct sets of damages, too, her economic damages, medical expenses, et cetera, in the United States, as well as her loss of consortium. But as to the loss of consortium part, I would submit that that is as much a result of the status of incarceration as the economic damage. Obviously, we appreciate Harbury and that Judge Kavanaugh, you wrote the opinion in that case. We would respectfully submit that it can and should be limited to its facts, which was that the principal plaintiff, the husband, suffered his injuries exclusively overseas. The only connection to the United States was the location of the wife here and the loss of consortium claim. With respect to the constitutional issue, we have cited the case, a Supreme Court case, to your honors, that strikes down an ordinance under rational basis review solely on an as-applied basis, and that's City of Claiborne. If what counsel for the government said was true, you could never have an as-applied challenge in a rational basis context, and that's exactly what the Supreme Court said is not true in City of Claiborne. This is a case much more like that, where though not fundamental and important right, not cable antennas or sewage fees from the city like in Armour. Thank you, Your Honors.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.